So, good afternoon, everybody. Almost heading towards good evening. I'm sorry I was not here, but I got triple booked for some strange reason. I don't know. Something about the infrastructure of APHA that should be able to, you know, identify when you cross conflict. Anyway, enough editorializing. So, I'm going to talk to you a bit about some of the work that we're doing in Metro Louisville to turn this into a, you know, kind of a local applied piece of work. We have, in fact, been doing this work for the 7 years that I've been there. And I wanted to put a plug in for NACHO early on, because we're talking about local NACHO and ASTO and the federal government. NACHO really has been beating the path as a leader in this for a long, long time. I'd say about 10 years. The discussion around health equity is a major driver in the direction that public health should be taking. NACHO has, in fact, change this policy apparatus so that every policy that's passed by NACHO has to be looked at through the health equity lens. NACHO has been in the lead in terms of organizing for data development, supporting initiatives like the Connecticut Health Officers Association Health Equity Index, and just generally being out front around health equity. So I wanted to make sure I put that plug in for my soon to be not my organization, because I'm as not a health officer, I can't belong to the board anymore, I have to move on. I'm sorry I missed the other presentations. If this is a duplicated, forgive me, but I think it's instructive to go back over what the world is saying about health equity. There are two definitions I have, I'm sorry, just one. It's a very long definition, but it really focuses on WHO language and concepts, because it talks about health equity as being the realization by all people of the highest attainable level of health, that it requires valuing all people and populations equally, that it entails focused and ongoing, not short-sighted or short-term, societal efforts to address avoidable inequalities. And avoidable is a key concept here, because inequity says that they are not natural. They're avoidable, they're unfair and unjust, but they are avoidable. By assuring the conditions for optimal health, and we know that the Institute of Medicine report several years ago about the future of public health said public health's responsibility is to assure the conditions in which people can be healthy. It fits very nicely in the context of a social determinant conversation, particularly for those who experience historical or contemporary injustices or social economic disadvantage. That really makes it clear who we're talking about here. This is the flip side. Now, I like this definition to talk about of health inequities, because if you absorb this, it makes it real clear what we're talking about. These are systemic, they're avoidable, they're unfair, and they're unjust, and all these differences that are on this slide. But it also says they're sustained over time and generations and beyond the control of individuals. So for those who push a market justice philosophy that says the benefits and burdens are all based upon what we do as individuals, society has no role, is absolutely antithetical to this position and belief. It's beyond the control of individuals. Society does have a role in what happens in terms of people's health. This is a new thought for me. I started doing some investigation of human rights language around health, because we talk this all the time. Health is a human right. We love to say that. Our politicians come to our neighborhoods and they say, health is a human right. And I'm not sure that we have adequately addressed what it means. This is a summary from lots of documents from WHO and others about what a human right means, what it means to be a human right. And the first is that it's universal. It's the birthright of every human being. That's where we start. So because we're born into this life, health is a basic right, a human right for all of us. It's aimed at safeguarding the inherent dignity and equal worth of everyone. It's that same language again from WHO. That human rights are inalienable. You know that from Declaration of Independence. You can't take them away. That's the notion of inalienable. That they're interdependent and interrelated. Every human right is closely related to every other human right. So any human right that's abridged affects all of that. So to the extent that we have not yet found a way to address health as a human right, all human rights are now negatively affected by that reality. It's articulated as entitlements of individuals and groups generating obligations of action. And the last part, internationally guaranteed and legally protected. If we really thought that we had health as a human right, these are the things that would be represented. And then I like this one. I found out that over 112, I think it's 113 nations around the world, in the language of their constitution, either talk about health as a human right, medical care, or health care, 112. This one jumped out at me as being absolutely phenomenal. This is the nation of Ecuador. It says the state guarantees the right to health, its promotion and protection through the development of food security in the Constitution, the provision of drinking water and basic sanitation, the promotion of a healthy family, work, and community environment, and the possibility of permanent uninterrupted access to health services in conformity with the principles of what? Equity, universality, solidarity, quality, and efficiency. Wow. Way to go. So, you know, yeah, give it up for Ecuador. I would, several years ago, Jesse Jackson Jr., congressman, was trying to get an amendment passed in the United States Constitution to put language about health as a human right in the Constitution. This was around the same time as they were trying to pass an amendment outlawing same-sex marriage. You may remember that several years ago. It's like, what are we doing, people? This is, come on. So for the next few minutes that I have, 2 minutes that I have left, let me talk about the Center for Health Equity. It is, first of all, it's localized in the African-American community, most directly affected by the health issues. It's not in the health department per se, it's out in the community. That yellow didn't work out too well. As you can see it. This is the mission statement, dedicated. Notice that we're talking about civic process, building social engagement, strengthening communities, and influencing public policy in an effort to create health equity. Not specific programs, but looking at systems change. There are a couple of slides on some of the work that we're doing. I'll point out a few because I only have a minute and a half left. We've been doing community hearings around health equity for quite some time now. We've been giving out many grants for civic capacity building. For instance, we gave out a grant to local kids at a primarily African-American high school to work with the law school in studying the effects of land use in the African-American community. Another grant that we gave out brought together a group of African-American women who put on a two-day conference on poverty amongst African-American women and what we do about that. So those are the kind of mini-grants that we've been putting out for the last few years. Retraining the workforce, a recognition that the public health department, a city agency that's talking about health equity, we don't live it. And we better find a way to turn this inside out and operationalize this thing called health equity in our daily practice, the way we relate to each other, our constituents, the government, you know, our resources, our budget, et cetera. So we're actively engaged in trying to do that important work. We've launched a series of Undoing Racism workshops in a recognition that, no, we do not live in post-racial America, I'm so sorry to say, that racism is still an ongoing problem, institutionally, individually mediated, and internalized, and we have to find a way to address that. So we've been supporting those. A photo voice project that we've been working on with youth to build youth empowerment around the conditions in their neighborhood, particularly around built environment, around public safety, et cetera. I didn't bring those with me because we were just not enough time to do that. The CHI project is a project that we're working with the Catholic Health Initiative, a series of Catholic hospitals who've agreed to step up to the plate and help us to develop an instrument to measure their referral patterns to see if they, in fact, are guilty of provider bias, conscious or unconscious, vis-a-vis unequal treatment and the Shulman chest pain study done several years ago. Food Justice and Security Task Force led us to an identification of food deserts in Metro Louisville that has led to a subsequent partnership with the YMCA, where we funded now our second Healthy in a Hurry corner store. The third one will be opening in about 2 weeks. This is a community's, what used to be neighborhood corner stores that never sold fruits and vegetables, who are now carrying fresh produce and in fact making a profit from it. Today, we got word from the mayor that the mayor has signed off on an executive order creating a food policy council and a bi-local policy council, all of which has been generated from the work of the Food Security Task Force. So there's a lot of work that you can do at the local level. We just got another grant from Kellogg Foundation to do what we're calling a racial healing grant, working with young African-American boys and girls and young white boys and girls, bring them together to dialogue on this issue of race and racism and what they can do to help move the community forward and into a more progressive way. Here's the slide on operationalizing health equity and the fact that we have all the entire staff of the department is being engaged in this process from the top down to line staff. The Connecticut Health Equity Index is a data collection piece because data is important, as you know, and measuring health equity, what does that mean? How do we do that? How many industries do we use? The group in Connecticut has been working on this for the last several years, and we're bringing it to Louisville fairly soon. And I think last but not least is GIS maps, which, again, I didn't bring any, but this is the most dramatic way to demonstrate to community and to policymakers what the hell is going on. The clear relationship between race, ethnicity, socioeconomic status, and hypertension, diabetes, heart disease, infant mortality, homicide, you know, lack of access to fresh fruits and vegetables, food deserts, all those maps fit on top of each other, and you have to be blind, deaf, and dumb to look at that and not recognize there's a relationship between where you live, the socioeconomic factors that determine your lifestyle, and the health outcomes in your populations. All policy is social policy, is health policy, social policy, housing policy, education policy, transportation policy, labor policy. The fact that this commission is coming, this council is coming together, boy, would I love to see them come out and make some really powerful statements about health as a basic human right. That would be really, that would be revolutionary in and of itself, wouldn't it? That's my last slide. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Troutman. Our next speaker is Dr. Linda Ray Murray. Dr. Murray serves as the Chief Medical Officer for the Cook County Department of Public Health. Very importantly, in addition, she is the President-elect of APHA. And she also plays a leadership role in many organizations, including NACHO's Social Justice and Social Equity team. Dr. Murray.
I want to give two quick commercials. One, I want to remind all of you from local health departments that NACHO, on its website, there's a tab for what we call our Local Health Department Coalition for Health Equity. And if you just join that process, there are lots of people working all over the country in health departments, large and small, around health equity. And that's a place where we share ideas and best practices and what didn't work and what we're mad about and frustrated about. So Adewale has given us an excellent discussion of one example, and there are many excellent examples. Let me suggest this, that the problem we have in the United States is the problem that was highlighted in the opening session. We have trouble speaking the truth. We have trouble saying we have a problem with racism in this country. We do not address these issues because we are not doing public health. We are committing malpractice. So it's not a question of just, we should do it, it's a human right. We have abandoned the basic scientific principles of our field. We know, we tell our students, that health is determined by a broad series of social factors, and that health behaviors are one component of that, just like medical care is one component. So, childhood obesity is not determined simply by the fact that some individual children's diet may not be appropriate or that they may not go out and exercise. It's far more determined by the agricultural policy of our country. And if you really want to address childhood obesity, then you ought to understand the agricultural legislation and the history of that legislation and the history of the food industry if you're going to make an impact. And if we're serious about building coalitions around childhood obesity, I'm not against getting kids to exercise, but where is public health when the education system is laying off gym teachers and closing down physical education programs and ending recess to cut budget and save money? So the issue of coalitions goes both ways. It's not just that health is in all policy, and this is a secret we don't have to tell everybody else. Public health is everything. It's everything. But that puts on us a special burden of speaking to these issues. Did we speak, as Alameda County did, to the foreclosure crisis? Did we say to our legislators and newspapers and community groups, this is a public health problem, this is a public health epidemic? No. Very few health departments did that. When we were battling H1N1, did we really speak to what we had to do? We spent time telling people to cover your cough, wash your hands, stay home. Did we say we should have mandatory paid sick leave so people can stay home and not spread this disease? If we're serious about doing what we need to do, why are we ashamed to just speak the truth? The NACHO Board has done so. The NACHO Board has said we endorse the World Health Organization's plan to address health equity. That means, yes, we must measure and understand the problem, issue reports, communicate with people why these inequities exist and how severe they are. But it also means we have to have action plans in place to improve the daily living conditions of people. Not just putting out a new pyramid, food pyramid, with nice colors of people running up the pyramid. I mean, I'm not against the food pyramid. I don't understand the food pyramid, I should be honest. But y'all can help me out. But that's not enough. We need to look at the social family supports that are necessary to help people. And we know what that means. It means full and fair employment, secure jobs, addressing climate change in a way that's equitable. And the third overarching goal of the WHO report calls for tackling inequitable distribution of power, money, and resources. That's probably the scariest thing for public health. But if we're really going to address our population reaching the highest attainable goal of health, if we're really going to eliminate health inequity, we have to do that. We have to redistribute the wealth of this country. We have to seize the power back from the people that presently hold it. We have to convince people that your vote counts. And if you stay home, then a small group of people get to determine the power of the nation. We have to be willing to address sexism and classism. We have to be willing to confront homophobia. We have to change the way this country works. That's really the mission of public health. So if you think you can do this just with one little program to improve pediatric immunization, or one little program to decrease the BMI of 10-year-olds, you're sadly mistaken. Our mission is a good mission. It's an honorable mission. It's a mission that's based in the history of our people and our country. And I believe the American people agree with that mission. We have to find the courage to stand up and give leadership to it.
Thank you, Dr. Murray. We look forward to your being the head of APHA. And last but not least is Dr. Michael Royster. Dr. Royster is the director of the Office of Minority Health and Public Health Policy for the state of Virginia's Department of Health. Prior to that, he was the director of the Crater Health District in Petersburg, Virginia. Dr. Royster, we're looking forward to hearing your comments.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I'm honored to be here in the presence of these distinguished folks in the field of health equity and public health in general, many of whom I've learned from, and actually Dr. Troutman has been my mentor in the past, so I'm very happy and honored to be here. I'm going to talk a little bit about the state perspective as the director of a state Office of Minority Health, who actually just changed our name to the Office of Minority Health and Health Equity, which we were very excited to do, to really focus more broadly on the positive of the goal that we have within Virginia and across the country. Virginia is actually a state-administered public health system, which means that all of our local health districts are a part of the state health department, part of the Virginia Department of Health, which is in some situations actually quite beneficial in that all the local health directors report indirectly to our state health commissioner through our deputy commissioner for community health services. And so that's a great opportunity for us as we try to promote health equity within our organization and across the Commonwealth. My office also reports to the state health commissioner, and therefore, I think, provides some visibility and some recognition that our commissioner is very serious about the issue of health equity. And fortunately, we did have a change in governor this past year, but she was reappointed, and so I think it's very positive for us as we move forward. The approach that we take around health equity, first of all, involves the definition, pretty much the same as what Dr. Troutman talked about, the Healthy People 2020 definition of health equity, and I won't go into that again, but you recall the definition that he showed up on the screen. But we also recognize that ultimately public health and issues of health equity are ultimately local, but as has been kind of reiterated on the panel, that these issues also are influenced by state-level factors and national factors. And so at the State Health Department, we have the opportunity to help build capacity within our local health districts, as well as at the state level within our agency and among other agencies and policymakers at the state level, where many of the broader policies that are implemented either within other sectors within state government and among the General Assembly have an influence on those broader social determinants and their distribution, which we know is really at the root of health inequity. And so my office provides leadership within the Virginia Department of Health around this effort. We are the state, obviously the state's Office of Minority Health, but we're also the State Office of Rural Health and the State Primary Care Office, and receive federal grants from all of those federal offices, including, thank you, Martha, for our grant this past September. And so that's an opportunity for us to try to integrate within our office issues of rural health, racial and ethnic minority health, the health of low-income and medically underserved communities, and how we can really use that kind of as a paradigm for promoting health equity very broadly, looking at race, class, gender, place of residence, and other factors. So we provide some direct programming as well as providing leadership and capacity building within our agency, as well as with other state-level agencies and policymakers. One of the main things that we do within the agency is around building capacity, providing technical assistance to our local health districts, as well as state offices and programs, so that they develop the understanding of the health equity framework and begin to use strategies to integrate that framework into the work that they do. We also use unnatural causes to help raise awareness within the agency and among partners. We have a strong focus on culturally and linguistically appropriate services, similar to what Dr. Auerbach talked about earlier. And we're also involved in other educational opportunities, such as a webinar series that we have going on with the University of Virginia and the Virginia Public Health Association, focused on health equity. One of the main things that we do, and I don't have slides with me today, is around data analysis and identifying high priority target areas. We use a lot of GIS, spatial analysis work, to really define the geographic distribution of health and disease within Virginia, as well as access to care, and social determinants of health. So as Dr. Troutman talked about, she can really demonstrate the association between segregation, poverty, other factors, and negative health outcomes. We're also updating our statewide health equity report for 2011, which will incorporate quite a bit of this type of data, as well as a health opportunity index that's geographically based to demonstrate where opportunity exists and does not exist in for people to be healthy within Virginia. As the state primary care office, we're very involved in access to care, access to equitable, culturally appropriate, quality health care and providers across the state, and involved with health information technology and other activities in rural communities, and have a strong focus on promoting true community-based participatory approaches to promote health equity in disadvantaged populations. And so we are directly involved in that to some extent. We also help to build capacity within the agency and with other partners to truly involve community residents and other key partners to identify and address health inequities. And that's often guided by the data that we develop around high priority target areas. And then finally, we're also looking at the issue of health equity in all policy and beginning to use health impact assessment, providing training around that issue. And then also we are building on a Healthy People 2020 grant that we just ended to really engage other state agencies and state policymakers to help them see their influence on health and health equity and how they can address promote health equity. And so our state health commissioner has been giving presentations to other agencies and policymakers, and we're following up to try to build broader collaboration across agencies, kind of in that integration model that Martha talked about earlier. And so that's kind of a general overview of what we're doing. Try to leave a little time for question and answer, but certainly I think some of the challenges that we're face, obviously everyone faces budget issues, funding. In Virginia, there's a unique barrier in that our governor, by the Virginia Constitution, can only serve one term, and so there's often obviously a lot of turnover. And this year we've switched parties, And not only do we have the state politics, but also there's nowadays the even at the state level, builds into the federal, the national politics as well. And so that's another issue that we face. But I hope that provides a good overview and look forward to any questions that others may have. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Great presentation. Well, now please line up if you have questions or comments. As people are lining up, I just want to say, I think this is, we're in a different place when we can be, when we can have federal, state, local leaders all talking about the importance of these issues and the ways to make it a priority and using examples from what's being done at all those different levels. So this, I think, is very promising relative to where we were a few years ago, where social determinants of health, root causes were not so prominently talked about. So please begin by sharing with us your thoughts. Great question. Thanks.
We one of the, it's perhaps a fortunate thing about ASCO is we have about 57 members and about 70 staff. So we are a boutique. When people come on, they're contacted immediately. Phone call, go out and visit them, bring them data on their state. Including in that is the demographics of their population, the structure of their minority health and health equity, and really the focus on this issue right off the bat. We use United Health rankings and how they talk, because United Health ranking has now gotten into health equity issues. So we hit them hard. We then do lots of training. First of all, they get a mentorship from another experienced health official. We send them for a week to the Kennedy School of Government to train them in how to work in government, because most come out of academics or medical practice or nursing or wherever it is. And then we give them grants for personal professional development, where they can focus specifically on needs they have. We provide a lot of policy committee work, and we also are there 24 hours, 7 days a week to provide technical assistance to research and give them in. So again, we have a fortunately a limited number of members, so we really can work with them very intensely. So they will hear this issue, I promise you.
Great, thank you.
I should mention that much of that is generously supported by Robert Wood Johnson Foundation.
Thanks. Next.
A couple of comments and a question. First of all, it's hard to have a panel of seven people be really interesting from the beginning to the end. So my congratulations to all of you. That's hard. Yeah. Right. Second of all, I'm somewhat disappointed. I don't come from a public health background. I'm in philanthropy. And I'm somewhat disappointed that for me, one of the most exciting topics of this conference about health equity through this kind of an audience. And I think that as the incoming chair, that's going to be a challenge. And I think that there's a lot of work that can be done, and I certainly applaud you for doing that. And my question is, what's the role for philanthropy in this work? I work with the National Group around sustainable agriculture and food systems, but we're also working with the grant makers of health and those working in other disciplines, specifically around food systems and access to healthy food. But lots of opportunities for
the
philanthropic community to work with all of you.
So one thing that I want to do right away is to reassure you that at AHA there are hundreds of competing sessions. And this year particularly, but frankly every year, we have literally 75, 150 sessions on health equity. This is an important topic to AHA. They're well attended. This room may have many chairs at the moment. Thank you.
Well, I think there's two particular challenges that not only the philanthropic organizations, but also the government grantors face. And that is that often the communities who are best at writing the grants are those with the greatest resources and not the neediest communities. Sometimes the communities who need it most don't have the resources. They don't have the jobs, they don't have the economic or education in the community. So they're not the ones writing the grants. I mean, so actually, you could use your geocoding to match where your grants go compared to where the health equity issues in this nation are. I bet you find quite a mismatch there. The other issue is, and challenge to you, and it's a wonderful group. Grant Makers in Health is largely healthcare oriented. There's a smaller public health group. But I would say, can every one of your grants address the issue, require the addressing the issue of health equity? That would be very powerful if you could get to that point. Same challenge we all have.
And just not even 2 cents, a penny and a half. I mentioned during my talk that the Kellogg Foundation has funded us to do racial equity work. So foundations can, in fact, make decisions about what kind of things they're going to fund and they, that are more relevant to this work around social determinant theory and health equity. You know, why not a multi-million dollar grant to focus on social determinants of health and finding ways to eliminate them to redistribute the source of power and wealth in the United States? That'd be fun to do.
Next question.
My name is Elaine Hi. And I started a long time ago, 25 years ago, when my biggest issue was access to healthcare and limited utilization. And I'm so glad that after 100 years of struggle, we have finally passed the Affordable Care Act. I had a chance to be at the bill signing, and you have made today the plane by reversing this whole focus on health disparities costing America $1.24 trillion, to really focusing on health equity. So I applaud you all for doing that. Ms. Beadle, you talked about integration, and I'm going to kind of wear my cost containment hat that I used to wear, you know, the personal health care, Medicaid, and then also what we're doing with here in terms of health equity. And that's the issue of quality. In the presidential campaign, we actually had this really astute politicians that actually wouldn't over-focus on health disparities and cultural competence, et cetera, and actually talk about the world of equality. And that, to them, became the parameter for health equity. Yet, when we're now really getting down to the nitty-gritty of Medicaid reimbursement, et cetera, can you tell me what the relationship would be between the health equity index and the qualities index? Because what we want to do is certainly reward and compensate providers based on their ability to achieve this health equity. But we oftentimes use in personal health care the definition of quality of health care. So when will those two intersect?
I'm going to punt the ball, actually. I can't answer that question. I actually don't know. I do agree with you that they have to be able to meet at some point. When it's going to happen, I don't know. But your points are well made. Paul, any thoughts?
Yeah, I think that it's a great question. We think a lot about it. But one of the issues we're seeing right now is we're hearing more about the term population health. And population health is actually individual clinical services measured at a population level. And therefore, it's going to be the accountable care organizations responsible for that. Well, that's not going to solve the thing you're talking about, because they're not going to get to the issue of health equity. They're talking about summing up individual patients, not looking at the differences between populations of patients. So it's a fascinating question. Thanks for asking.
What's the answer?
The answer? We have to come up. First of all, accountable care organizations are fundamentally health care organizations. They're going to measure what happens in health care. We cannot achieve health equity in healthy populations simply through clinical services. And so that construction isn't nearly enough. We have to marry public health with the population health and accountable care organizations. That's going to be a huge challenge for us. We have to come up with measures of health equity for the clinical sector.
And I think we have time for one more question. Elaine.
Well, good afternoon. I'm Elaine Keaton. I am president of Yale School of Public Health in Connecticut, but I work for 25 years in local public health practice. And I just want to say that I understand that some of my concerns with speaking about relative low attendance here, but I am thrilled that we are focusing this conference on health equity. I'm thrilled to see a powerful movement back to social determinants of health. And I really feel that we've made tremendous gains, and I don't think
You've got five questions.
Yeah, I'm just saying, first of all, it's not easy. It's not an easy task. And you do have to do the stuff that we do with public health. But the operationalizing public health, operationalizing health equity stuff that I put up, I think I did. Yeah, I did. And we didn't talk about it, but the intention was to have every person who works in public health find a way to get next to this material, to begin to understand its relationship to their work. One of the questions that is asked in the dialogue conversations is, how does this apply to what you do on a day-to-day basis? Now, it's a lot easier for some than others, like the sanitarian who goes out to do restaurant inspection, they understand. But on the other hand, if you're doing restaurant inspection, it's very clear that there's a difference in the standard of restaurant inspection in one part of town and the other. Well, not the inspection per se, but the nature of the quality of what's sold and the nature of the quality of the business itself. So it's in your face if you want to take an opportunity to take a look at it. So the challenge is, yes, to get them to everybody in the department to see if this relates to everything that they do on a day-to-day basis and begin to incorporate it into the day-to-day practice of the public health agency. I would be less than truthful to say we're there. We're making really good progress, but we got a ways to go.
If I could add to that, one of the things I think I would say is that we've increasingly had to work outside of our comfort zone or what has traditionally been thought of, at least in the last several decades, as public health arena. For example, we've assigned people more and more to work with other agencies, both state and local, that don't have health in their title. Just what Ms. Beadle was discussing about getting other federal agencies involved. We now spend a lot of time working with the schools and with the commissioner of education within Massachusetts and with the superintendents of schools. And what that has required is we have to understand their world and their needs and how we can influence them. And the same thing we're doing with the transportation people, where we're trying to understand at the local level with zoning, at the state level, how can we have an influence on their decisions? Because I think if we think about a lot of the social determinants, they're things we don't have in our direct control as public health people or within our budget. But what we do have is we have the knowledge about the health data, which can help to inform other decisions. I think we have evidence-based approaches where we can offer suggestions, but we've got to wait till the moment's right sometimes, and that means spending time in someone else's turf and building levels of trust and understanding where the opportunities are for intervention when they come up. And that's also different from us, you know, that it's about other people other than just public health. So I think At this point, I just want to say, make sure everybody can stay on schedule. We want to thank you all for coming. We really appreciate your interest, and again, thanks to a wonderful panel.